Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today to talk about diabetes is Dr. Greg Garrity and pro basketball legend Dominique Wilkins. Dr. Garrity is board certified in endocrinology, diabetes, and metabolism, and is a past president of the American Diabetes Association, New York State affiliate. Dominique Wilkins is a 9-time NBA All-Star. Wow. And one of the all-time elite scoring machines in NBA history. I didn't write this, but I believe it. His nickname was the Human Highlight Film. He started playing with the Atlanta Hawks and was inducted into the National Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield in 2006. But when he turned 40, he received an unexpected diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. Since then, he has dedicated himself to raising awareness and educating people about the disease, which afflicts more than 25 million Americans. Okay, so Dr. Garrity, Mr. Wilkins, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Well, I want to get one thing over with Greg Garrity, my personal hero. Tell us a little bit about why Dominique is here.
Dominique is here to share some of his thoughts about diabetes and the importance of detection and treatment, early recognition, and talk some even about preventing the disease.
Yeah, but isn't he going to appear somewhere?
He is going to be here tonight. He's talking with us tonight. He's made a trip to town. He's going to be speaking at the Marriott Hotel between 6 and 7:30 this evening, talking about winning the game against diabetes. So we're delighted to have him here and very grateful that he could share his message in an even more widespread manner this afternoon with you.
And it's free, right? And so you have to get there. It says here, free.
Free.
But seating is limited. So if you're going to get there early. And it's, again, at the Marriott. And it's sponsored by St. Peter's Health Partners. And it is 189 Wolf Road in Albany. So, Dominique, if I may call you that.
You can.
I want to ask you, how did you find out about the diabetes?
Well, I found out after I retired, a year after I retired. And, you know, just had normal symptoms like most people who find out they're diabetics. I had those symptoms. And so, you know, once I found that I was diabetic, what I did is I decided to make that lifestyle change, which we often have to make when we face with a chronic disease like this.
So what'd you do?
Change my diet, for one. And because, you know, you eat in a certain way most of your life, you know, but you're in great shape, so it's hard to detect. But I stopped working out, stopped training, and I found out very quickly I've developed some of the same problems that most people developed, and decided to change my diet, get on medication, and exercise. It's that simple. Those three things working together keep you healthy.
Okay, I'll ask you, I'll put you through the same drill I always put Dr. Garrity through. Mm-hmm. So what do you have for breakfast?
What I have for breakfast, it depends on where I'm at. But usually I have for breakfast, I eat pretty lightly on breakfast. I don't really eat breakfast that much. But, you know, I'll have some cereal and stuff like that with some low-fat milk and stuff like that. And if I want to use a sweetener, I use Splenda. So I don't use any sugar at all.
Yeah, well, right. And for lunch?
For lunch, again, it depends. I like, mostly my meals are pretty simple. I like chicken, fish, sure. Turkey. I like asparagus and I love spinach and that sort of thing. So I eat pretty healthy as much as I can.
And dinner?
Basically the same thing.
And so tell me, diabetes in your family?
My father and grandfather both died from it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So you take this very seriously.
Oh, I take it very seriously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how are your numbers holding up?
Pretty good. You know, my numbers average between 90 and 120.
When you wake up in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're on a particular medication?
I'm on, I treat it very aggressively with several different types of medications that work for me. But, you know, a lot of times people have to search until they find the right ones that work for them.
Right.
And so, again, by treating it aggressively and taking what I call that combination therapy, using that platform really keeps me where I need to be as far as my numbers.
So tell us, when you come into a town or into a city as a sort of ambassador talking about this, what is it that you want to achieve?
Well, the thing I want to achieve and the thing that the message I try to get across is don't wait till something bad happens before you make changes. And that's a lot of times when people are faced with diabetes, they don't act until something bad happens to them. You know, so the thing we try to do is put preventative measures in place or show them how to do it so they don't have those problems down the road.
How do you work out? What do you do?
Interval workouts, treadmill. I do exercises that works for me. And because I don't like running outside anymore, I don't believe in going running 3 miles and all that, you know. So I get on a treadmill and I get my interval workout in where, you know, it's shorter workout, but, you know, you're getting a lot of work done.
Yeah, sure.
Interval workout. And I shoot 150 shots with my sons. I have two sons that play basketball, so that keeps me pretty active.
Are they tall?
Very. My oldest son is 6'9".
Wow.
Yeah.
That's tall.
It's pretty tall.
What is how tall do you have to be to really be a great center or a great basketball player?
You just have to have a big heart and some talent. Yeah. It don't really matter the size.
I remember when I was growing up, everybody talked about Bob Cousy as the little guy, you know. But it turned out he was over, you know, way over 6 feet, right?
Well, Bob Cousy's 6'5". I mean, he was no little guy. You know, he was a great point guard, too.
Yeah. Greg Garrity, what do you make of all this?
Well, I'm telling you, I know your listeners can't see Dominique, but
Actually, they can.
Can they?
If you look right in front of you, there is a warning that the guests never read, which is that we stream this all. So you can see the whole thing. And you have to watch out that you don't make a mistake here while you're sitting here. I remember once there was a doctor here and somebody called in on Medical Monday. And they were describing their situation, and the doctor put his hands around his throat. And that was bad because somebody could see it, you know, on the internet. On the internet.
He could have been just stretching.
Yeah, could have. We didn't get any complaints. Maybe that was one of the good days during that time. Greg, what is it that you think that we've heard from Dominique about how to protect yourself, but how much exercise do you think you recommend? Yeah.
Well, first of all, I was going to say that Dominique looks like he is doing just fine.
He looks
and
terrific.
From what I'm hearing, I want to, you know, applaud him because he's definitely got the right idea. He doesn't need to hear that from me, but I'm delighted to hear exactly as he said that you make an investment in yourself, and so you take care of yourself. How much exercise does it take? I think more is better, but we talk about 2.5 hours a week, maybe a half hour a day, 5 days a week.
Do I get a pat on the back for doing an hour every day?
You do.
Oh, yeah.
You do.
Of course. Yeah. Absolutely.
I want that pat. You know what I mean?
You've got it. You've got it. Yeah, but we talk about a minimum of 2.5 hours a week. Now, for beginners, of course, that seems overwhelming, too much, but you start out slow and you'll work your way up.
And you get addicted to it, I can tell you that much.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
That's the hopes. Yeah, you know, hopes that people get addicted to it to the point where they're managing it every day.
Yeah.
You know, instead of every other day or every 3 days, you know, to have some type of physical activity at least once a day, 1 hour a day.
Sure. Dominique Wilkins, what are you most proud of since you've started this?
Well, I think the thing I'm most proud of that I've been able to stay on course since I've been a diabetic for the last 14 years, that I haven't strayed, you know, away.
Well, your numbers are terrific, actually.
Yeah, so, yes, exactly. And that's because you stay focused. And I think that's the thing I'm most proud of.
Oh, that's great. And when you go into different communities, are you treated differently? I mean...
It depends on where you go. I mean, I'm treated pretty much the same wherever I go. Because, you know, the thing that's satisfying for me is that I'm not just looked at as a basketball player, a former basketball player, but someone who's actually trying to educate and help people. And so that's the biggest satisfaction I could ever get.
Can you remember when you were inducted into the Hall of Fame?
I do.
What was that like?
It was hard to put in words. It's like immortalizing you.
It was, yeah.
That's what it is. It really is.
I told some people here today you were coming in, and they all freaked out. They all think, my God, this is really terrific. Ladies and gentlemen, it's your turn to talk to Dominique Wilkins, to Greg Garrity about diabetes. Any question you have, we'll try to come up with it. The telephone number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Love to hear from you and your questions. And we will take a short couple of second break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Premier Medical Group, gastroenterology, urology, internal medicine, endocrinology, geriatrics, nephrology, and pulmonology, with offices throughout the Hudson Valley. PremierMedicalHV.com. Buttermilk Falls Inn Milton, a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront resort with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant and spa. Now booking holiday corporate and private parties and more. ButtermilkFallsInn.com. And Middletown Medical, now offering evening walk-in urgent care for children every weeknight until 9, plus evening sports physicals, MiddletownMedical.com. And Furniture Options Goshen, specializing in the stressless, functional reclining chair, engineered for head, lumbar, and body weight support, FernOps.com.
And we are back. It's a wonderful program with our wonderful Dr. Greg Garrity. And Dominique Wilkins, NBA All-Star and ambassador from, you know, the diabetes helping community to all of the rest of us, teaching us how to do it right. We've already talked about exercise and eating the right things, and I'm always after Greg about what he eats because I want to catch him in a mistake. Let's take the first phone call from Pamela from Pine Plains. Pamela, you're on.
Hello. I was just put on metformin. My blood sugar, my last fasting blood sugar was 142, and my A1C was 7.3. So I have a strong family history of diabetes on both sides of my family, and my doctor wanted me to start metformin, 500 a day for 3 days. And then she wants to bump me up to 1,000 a day. And I'm just curious if that's the best way to start. You know, I'm 53, and
this is
your opinion.
This is Dominique Wilkins. I think that he's starting you off the right way. You know, I started off pretty much the same way, and you know, it just helps you manage and maintain your sugar level. So along with the exercise and diet change, you're gonna feel much better, and you're gonna be happy. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, if you practice those three things with your medication included in those three, is that you're gonna find that you're gonna live a lot easier. You're gonna feel better, but you're gonna be more vibrant and alive when your exercise kicks in and your diet change. I mean, all those things working together are gonna make you feel a lot better.
Now, Greg Garrity, in the old days, I had friends. When I'm old now, 72, but I remember I had friends who had diabetes early, and it wasn't a good thing. It was sort of a death sentence back in the day. That's not true anymore, right?
No, thank God. Well, Alan, you know, I live with diabetes, and
yes,
I aspire to play ball like Dominique. That will never happen.
Right.
But I know in order to do that, the first thing I have to do is take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as he said, you need to take an interest in yourself. In terms of longevity and living well, I think things have changed dramatically mm-hmm. over the last two decades. So people living with diabetes now should not see this as a death sentence, because it is not. If we do what we have to do to get our job done, as you've heard Dominique say, then we should be able to live well, get our A1C down, get close to where we want to be, and with that, hopefully prevent complications.
Now let's talk about that A1C for a moment, as Pamela just described. What do we want to get the A1C to? What number?
Well, I think this is going to be personalized, mm-hmm. Alan. So it may be different for Dominique mm-hmm. than for me, than for you, or the next person. And so the doctor should be sort of looking at each individual and giving them a personal target. Sometimes one size doesn't fit all, but in general, if I could generalize, I would say we're looking to get that A1C down under 7%, which mm-hmm. corresponds to an average sugar of 154.
And an A1C, again, anybody want to answer that one for me? What is it?
It's like a 3-month average of your blood sugars. And, you know, I've gotten mine down to 5.5 to 6 right now. Yeah. So I'm doing pretty well. But, you know, I think for me, having the platform that Novo Nordisk Pharmaceuticals has put together to give me this platform to really educate people about how you manage this disease and how important it is that it be a priority in your life. You know, to have a platform like that is very important for me because now I'm able to educate not just family members but friends and people who you don't know, people you know that suffers with this disease, to kind of give them some background, some education on things that they need to do.
Now, what's the relationship with the drug company? It's Novo Nordisk.
Well, Novo Nordisk Pharmaceuticals, I am personally a national spokesperson for the company. I've been a national spokesman for Novo Nordisk for over 6 years now. Wow, it's going by quick here. And so it's been, I'm going to tell you, they are one of, now I've been with other companies that had the same type of structures in place, but I'm telling you, nobody that I've ever dealt with had the focus, the time, and the commitment like Novo Nordisk Pharmaceuticals. As far as standing on a wall for diabetes in this country, there's nobody standing on a wall like that.
Okay, Pamela, anything else?
Much. I'll get started today.
Hey, Pamela, get going.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Get moving.
Get going.
Okay.
Talk
okay.
To you.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Jeannie in Scaticoke. No. I'm sorry. To Jamie in Albany and then Jeannie. Okay, Jamie, you're on.
Yeah, I just had a question about what some of the early warning symptoms might be for, say, you know, a guy in his mid-40s, you know, concerned about his health. And just some of the things to look out for.
Well, I can tell you what I experienced before I found out I was diabetic. Frequent urination, always fatigue, blurred vision, feel like you're floating at times after you drink certain products or stuff like certain things you eat. Those are signs that you need to go to the doctor and get screened. And that's your first line of defense, getting screened. Now you get a blueprint of what your health looks like.
Greg, you want to add anything to that?
Well, frequent thirst and urination are very common. Blurring of the vision, fatigue, very common symptoms. And it's also possible that people have no symptoms. We have over 5 million people in this country with diabetes that don't know they have it. In New York State, 750,000. So people may not have symptoms. The blood sugar has to be up over 200 generally to create symptoms that we talked about.
Interesting. But there's a lot of, there's a huge amount, guys, of diabetic people who have low sugar, but we're talking, as we heard before, you know, numbers in the 90s to 120, and 120 is the official, is 120 the official mark of diabetes?
Right, no, over 125 and higher is a high fasting consistent with diabetes. Under 100 is normal, and then a fasting level between 100 and 125 is consistent with prediabetes.
Okay, so here's my question, Dominique, that you'll answer for us. How come this country is going through this incredible amount of diabetes?
The obesity level in our kids is for one. It's what we eat. It's what we eat. You look at the type of foods that we eat in this country, and you see the obesity level in our children. The numbers are off the chart now.
And it's because but I'm not fat, and I got it. I got pre-diabetes.
Well, you know, again, you know, we're older now, you know, so you know, everything hits us when we get older. But when you see so many children out here that's affected by diabetes, and it's not the children's fault. It's the parents' fault.
Yeah.
It's us as parents. We have to do better in raising our kids, be their parent first and their friend second.
So is it, Greg, is it only the fact that we're getting fatter, or is it something else? In this epidemic.
Yeah, I think the epidemic of obesity is leading the epidemic of diabetes. So we have a country now where 60% of American adults are overweight or obese. Mm-hmm. And so that is the primary cause. However, it is not the only cause. There are some genetic predispositions. Mm-hmm. So if you're black, if you're Native American, if you're Hispanic, you may be more at risk because of your genetic predisposition. So if you then add on to that an unhealthy lifestyle, you increase your risk further. Certainly if you have a family history, that increases the risk further. So We have a number of factors combining to create the perfect storm for diabetes, and that's why we have an epidemic today.
Jamie, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Janine in Scaticoke. Okay, Janine, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a quick question. I am a pharmacist, but I'm a hospital pharmacist at Albany Med. But my mother-in-law was recently diagnosed as a pre-diabetic. So I said, I went through my rigmarole, even though I'm not, I don't specialize in diabetes. And I said, I'd like you to make an appointment with the endocrine group or, you know, and speak to a registered dietitian. Someone in her physician's office, I don't know who, gave her a list of things. You cannot eat this. And it was a huge list. And I tried to de-escalate her anxiety about that. She is telling me that her insurance will not cover it, which shocks me. I have an insurance that's very proactive.
You mean cover the dietitian?
Correct, because okay. She's registered, because she's pre-diabetic, as opposed to diabetic. She goes, I don't need to go to an endocrinologist. I'm not diabetic. I said, Mom, you know, exercise, your diet, you know, it's carbs, it's ratios, it's balancing, it's, you know, sizes and things like that. You know, I'm the daughter-in-law. I don't know as
well.
You know, but the bottom line is, what can be done? Can anything be done? How can I get her into a registered dietitian? Or, you know, I need.
Well, you need to take her to her doctor first, and so she needs to be screened to see if she's a diabetic or not.
Right, that's where she's at now.
Right.
So she's been told I'm pre-diabetic, and she was going. She had to go back and things like that. So. It's kind of moving in that direction.
Well, I think you have to go to your doctor. I think you have to take your doctor's advice first. You know, you got to, if she comes to the point where she's a diabetic, then she has to be on medication. Then you have to set a diet for her, you know, of what she's comfortable in eating. Now, not to say she has to cut out everything, because I don't believe in that. I didn't cut out everything, but I took out a lot of the bad stuff that
right.
I knew that was bad for me.
Like what, Donnie?
Like I took away like a lot of sweets. You know, I liked apple pies and stuff like that.
Do you ever cheat?
You have to cheat. I mean, it's okay to cheat.
Well, that's where I'm trying to get her to the point where she can go to a registered dietitian and understand, because she was just given lists of things like, you can't have grape juice, you can't have grapes, you can't, and I'm saying, no, that's not the reality. That's not living.
This is what it is. You know, and when I say cheat, I don't mean that, you know, you can just go out and cheat like crazy, you know,
right.
and have anything you want. Just have smaller portions of what your favorite food is. Instead
right.
of having a half of the pie, have one slice,
right.
you know, because your body, gonna let you know how much you can cheat.
Right.
But at the same time, you got to put yourself on a consistent diet
right.
that works for you. Now, it's some things that she can still eat, like she still eat some fruit, you know.
Right.
So a lot of times a dietitian will put so much stuff on those lists, it just confuses people.
Well, grapes
you
are
know?
No good. I always,
you know, so
I always
again,
grapes.
I still
right.
eat.
What'd you say?
Moderation.
Moderation, exactly.
Right, and I'm trying to get her there, but I'm a pharmacist, so she doesn't really want to hear this from me.
Why
I don't
not?
Think, and I'm her daughter-in-law, which I think is the kicker.
You can't give up on her though. You got to still stay. You got to keep constantly trying to push her to get in there to see what type of medication she's possibly going to be on, and then you can set a plan. You can put a plan together on what I need to do going forward, because quite frankly, a lot of the juices that's out here you can't drink as a diabetic because it's going to send your sugar level to the roof.
Right.
Yeah, and Greg, did you want to add something to that?
Well, I would add this, Janine, and that is there are some 79 million Americans with prediabetes, like your mother-in-law has.
Right.
And currently with prediabetes, there is no insurance reimbursement code for doctors to care for prediabetes. And yet, people with prediabetes develop some of the very typical complications of diabetes, such as heart disease, even though they don't have diabetes. Furthermore, we're trying to keep them from getting diabetes.
Exactly.
So what's one way we could get in? I agree with everything Dominique has said. Another tool that can be used if your mother-in-law is overweight or obese, she may qualify for dietitian counseling.
So self-control is so important. I was in the doctor's office this morning. And guess what they had out there? They had, I'm taking a lollipop and showing everybody a lollipop. No, I didn't eat it. I was tempted. I put it in my pocket. Probably give it to somebody. But, you know, we don't want to eat things like pure molten sugar. I mean, that's the last
right.
thing we want to do. But now I think I have some more advice for you. You know, this mother-in-law thing, that's tricky. So, you know, you got to be careful.
No, you got to trick mother-in-law sometimes.
Yeah, sure.
You got sometimes you got you got to take them like say you're taking them out to eat or taking them to a play or something, and then you take him in that doctor. Oh, by the way, I need you to stop over here and see this doctor for a second. Let him check you out. Just little stuff like that, you know. I thought I had to do that to my brother.
you got to
trade. He laughed about it. He said, okay. That was really good, but at least you got me in. I got checked. I found out what was going on, and he's fine now.
But we have this familial thing. I mean, this is very common that when one person in the family has it, brother has it. It's quite common to have other people get it. Yeah, so so that's right. You know, my mother-in-law never liked the fact that I had a PhD as opposed to an MD. She made that quite clear.
At least, you know, she acknowledged a degree, right?
So. Well, no, not exactly. But we'll get into it some other time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Let's go to... is that number three? Is that right? Three? I think it's three. Okay. Let's go to Sandra in Wilbraham. Whoops, that's not her. Okay, what is that? Number five, maybe? Sandra, is that you?
Hello.
Sandra?
Yes.
Good. Your turn.
Thank you.
Sure.
Good afternoon. Just calling to inquire if any of you have heard of a connection between vitamin D and diabetes.
I'm aware of some research, Sandra, but I wouldn't consider myself an expert here talking about low vitamin D levels and the relationship with diabetes, and I'm not aware of the power of that data and how large it is. So I think there are some studies there looking at this relationship, suggesting that maybe low D may put people at risk for diabetes, but again, I'd have to go back and look at those studies, and at this point, I think there's more work that needs to be done.
There's something called there's something, Sandra, called the Vitamin D Council. Now, they push vitamin D, but you could go online and look for the Vitamin D Council and see the studies that they refer to. I think those are some of the ones that Greg is talking about. But then again, they think that, and I take a lot of it, by the way, they think that vitamin D cures almost everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
I'll take a look at that.
Thanks for calling. Yeah, bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Diane in Saugerties. Diane, you're on.
Yes.
Hello. Hi, Diane.
Yes, I'm wondering if the doctor is aware of monogenic diabetes.
Tell me a little bit more, Diane, what you mean by that.
Well, I happen to know about this because my grandson was born with this about just over a year ago, and none of the pediatricians or anybody in the... the NICU where he was, knew about this, but fortunately, the neonatal endocrinologist had studied with one of the few people who's researching this, and it's only a condition that's been known about only about 10 years, and some people are born with a genetic mutation that manifests as a type of diabetes that's not type 1 or type 2,
yes,
and can be treated very differently.
So I am aware of this situation that occurs very early on in life. In fact, this past June at the American Diabetes Association meeting in Chicago, I heard a researcher talk about this. He was receiving an award and has devoted his career to this. So it's very uncommon. But the more we look for it, the more we're discovering that there are some genetic forms of diabetes that are inherited very early on in life. Just following birth, in fact.
So at some point, we'll probably be, if you were up at 3 o'clock this morning, as I was, and you were listening to the BBC, they were talking about genetic engineering and whether this is good or bad. But obviously, at some point, we're going to find out what these genetic aberrations are, and we'll be able to control for them.
Yeah. Well, right now, it's thought that the vast majority of folks with type 2 diabetes and also type 1 this is viewed as a heterogeneous disease. In other words, a lot of different reasons for it. But this monogenic diabetes, there's one clear gene defect that results in the diabetes. And many times these individuals can be treated with medications by mouth, not insulin. even though they're developing their diabetes at a very young age.
So when did
that's right.
So I want go ahead.
Because my family's been affected by this, and my grandson is doing extremely well. He's off all medication at the moment. But we're trying to get the message out that anybody who has an infant that's diagnosed with diabetes ought to check into this because it's not widely known in the medical community.
I would agree with that. You know, we talk generally, we talk about two forms of diabetes, type 1 and type 2. So I have the type 1 variety where I need to take insulin. If I don't, I get very sick very quickly. Dominique has type 2 diabetes, and he's able to manage it with diet and exercise and some other medication, as you heard him say. The monogenic diabetes is a very rare type of diabetes, although the closer we look, the more we find that occurs.
It's
a type of type 2 diabetes, a form of type 2 diabetes.
But how do we know he's, Dominique, in all due deference, I mean, how do we know he has it if his numbers are pre-diabetic?
No, when I found out I was diabetic, my sugar level was over 350.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so yeah, I knew I was a full-blown type 2 diabetic. And again, because it runs in my family, somebody in my family was bound to have diabetes.
Yeah.
And unfortunate, well, I won't say unfortunate, but, you know, I was the one who was affected by it. So.
And something else was just mentioned by Diane. I want to get this done with, but when we, and that you've picked up on, Greg, when we, is it the fact that we're looking for it more assiduously now that accounts for the higher numbers?
I think so, yes. I think the higher numbers of diagnosis, A, and B, the higher numbers of monogenic diabetes because we're becoming more aware of it. This is only something in the last couple decades that's become better appreciated by people in the medical community.
Yeah. Hey, Diane, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. Look, if you want to talk to either the great NBA All-Star Dominique Wilkins or to Dr. Greg Garrity, give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. Lots of phones right now, 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support comes from St. Mary's Healthcare, Amsterdam, New York, offering minimally invasive spine surgery. Choose stmarys.com. Marriott Town Place Suites, Albany Downtown, offering studio one- and two-bedroom suites with fully equipped kitchens. Amenities include indoor pool, breakfast, local transportation, Wi-Fi, and parking. tpsalbany.com for reservations. Anderson Center for Autism, Statsburg, New York, working to improve lives on the spectrum from 18 months to adulthood. Diagnosis to graduation, AndersonCares.org. And Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Annual holiday marketplace featuring a gallery of wreaths, local vendors, crafts, and more. December 7th from 10 to 5 and December 8th from 10 to 4 p.m. BerkshireBotanical.org.
And we're back with the great NBA All-Star Dominique Wilkins with our wonderful Dr. Greg Garrity. And the phones are open, and we'd love to hear from you. There's one free phone right now. So let's go to Gregory in Hyde Park. Gregory, you're on.
Oh.
Hey, Greg, you're on.
Hi. I was diagnosed as diabetic 4 years ago, and my doctor didn't insist on any kind of daily monitoring. I did lose a lot of weight within a very short period of time and got the numbers down. And I went off metformin a year ago. I've been doing pretty well, but I'm still wondering, you know, should I be thinking about more frequent monitoring? I go in now every 6 months for an A1C test.
Well, I think, you know, it's great that you got that weight off because, again, you know, and depending on what your doctor's recommendations are to take less medication, I mean, that's a definite call that you guys have to make together. And obviously, you're doing very well with it, but I do think you still have to have some monitoring of your A1Cs and really test your sugar level because, you know, because diabetes is pretty much held at bay, doesn't mean that it's gone. It's still there.
Mm-hmm. Greg?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Sometimes we do all the right things. We watch our diet, we get the weight down, and yet the blood sugar continues to rise.
Is there, you know, at the end of when they're doing things for the various drugs that they advertise on television, and then at the end they give you about 30 seconds of all the bad things that can happen to you from those from those drugs. It's enough to make you never want to take a drug again. And death can sometimes occur. Mm-hmm. You know, that's nice. Is there anything that we know about the diabetic drugs that are negative?
Well, there are. And so this is why contact with the provider, with the physician, is so important to discuss the pluses and minuses of these medications. Mm-hmm. None of these medications is a free ride. And I'm not talking about cost. I'm talking about the potential side effects. They all have their pluses and minuses. And ultimately, when it comes down for me to write a prescription with a patient, I want them to know that I'm doing this because I feel it's in their best interest. But if they experience unexplained swelling, shortness of breath, chest pain,
death,
to let me know.
Let them
before
know
they get to that point, right, Alan.
Dominique, anything you want to say about that?
Hey, I agree 100% with the doctor. Good doctor here, is that, you know, everything. I mean, I look at medications like this. Some are great, some are bad. Some, you know, give you a quick fix. Some takes a little longer. Like you said, you know, they all have their pluses and minuses. You know, you have to experiment with different medications till you find the right one. You know, and that's why your doctor always tell you, if you have any type of side effects, let me know if we need to make changes. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have a line of communication with your physician. That's why that relationship building is very important with your personal physician.
Okay, that was.
Alan, I just would like, please, to say one more thing for Greg about daily testing. And that is, you know, on my side of the exam table, I find that the people who are doing the best are like Dominique. They've taken an interest in their own well-being. Mm-hmm. And so these are the people that are doing the heavy lifting every day. They follow the instructions. And so, Greg, for you, you know, daily testing is a way of, you know, taking back and being empowered to do the right thing.
Absolutely.
This way you know how you're doing and you can see for yourself, so that if you're in trouble, then you can reach out to Doc. And if you're on the right path, you can stay on the right path.
But, of course, we all know that if we have – I did something very bad the other night. I had some ice cream. Not just some. I had a lot. Now, we pretty well know that if we're going to test ourselves the next morning, we're going to pay for it. So, you know, the whole idea is not to avoid the testing.
That's right. Well, I'm in the same boat,
exactly,
and I agree with you.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Hey, Gregory, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Kimby.
Okay. Let's go to Victor in Albany. Okay, Victor, you're on.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question about using insulin in combination with oral products. My understanding is most patients, I think from what I've been hearing, is that patients often get started on orals, and then at some point the doctor or the patient or someone says, you know, we really need to get more aggressive and add insulin. How is that done, and how safe does the doctor feel about that combination?
Yeah. So, Victor, for type 1 diabetes, the type of diabetes I have, everybody with type 1 diabetes has to take insulin. That's it. The orals do not work for them. But for the vast majority of people who have diabetes, who have type 2 diabetes, oftentimes we start with lifestyle change, metformin, and then additional medications by mouth thereafter. In order for these pills to work, they all rely on the body's own ability to make insulin. And in type 2 diabetes, that's defective. So over time, as the body's own insulin levels fall, the pills seem to be less and less effective. So at that time, we then add on insulin, typically starting with a once-a-day shot, added on to the pills, and then building from there to get the blood sugars to the personal goal that the doctor has set for the patient. How common is it? Very common.
Once you start taking insulin, can you ever kick it?
Absolutely, you can kick it. So oftentimes when someone comes in newly diagnosed, like Dominique was, with blood sugars that high, we might start someone on insulin. And then with that, introduce the importance or educate about the importance of diet, exercise, and lifestyle. And as the weight comes down, the insulin dose comes down, and they may go on oral medication in combination with insulin, and that is their then as there is continued improvement, they may come off the insulin and just remain on medication.
Exactly.
Well, exactly. You know, it just depends on the person, too. You know, as you get healthier, you know, you talk to your physician and, you know, you come up with a plan. Okay, now we can cut back on medication. Not saying you can come off of medication, you know, but we can cut back and see how it goes over a period of time. We check your sugar levels and see what your averages are. And if you continue to get better, we may continue to cut back. And so that's the relationship my doctor and I had. You know, we'll see how well you're doing as far as losing your weight, making sure you stay in shape and what you're eating.
Are there enough doctors to do all this? Greg Geraghty, I know that the number you gave me before on the air here was frightening in terms of sounded like it was approaching a third of all Americans, a little less than a third of all Americans on some kind of diabetic regime. You know, do we have enough doctors who know what they're doing?
Well, there's certainly a lot of diabetes. And in fact, more than 1 in 10 individuals in this country has diabetes, and then even more than that are at risk for it. So I think it's important that patients educate themselves. If they are not getting the answers they think they should be hearing from their doctor, that they look around. And some doctors will be very knowledgeable and expert in this area, and others will be less knowledgeable. So I think it's important for patients to advocate for themselves when it comes to their health care, including diabetes.
Dominique, how did you find your doctor?
Well, actually, I won't say by mistake. It was just I heard of this group called the Laureate Group in Atlanta, and they was known to be pretty good doctors over there. So when I was having my problem, I decided to go over to that group, and I met a guy named Dr. Arnold Millis, and he's been my doctor now for 14 years now.
And Victor, you wanted to say something else?
Yeah, Alan, I was just going to ask the Human highlight film. And by the way, it's a pleasure to speak to you, Dominique. I was a big fan. My question is, knowing what you said earlier, that you had a family history,
mm-hmm.
and you spoke earlier that you have sons as well, what have you been doing with them at this stage in the game to proactively prepare them for, and that's not to say that they will get diabetes, but the greater likelihood that they could have diabetes? What kinds of things have you been doing with your family?
Well, a couple of things. The first thing is I make sure all my kids are screened to get a better idea of where their health stands, and if they're having any problem, which problem to attack. You know, by having that platform there of, you know, what your health looks like, now we know how to treat it if something goes wrong. And I kind of, you know, in my house, we don't have sodas. We don't have no sodas and juices and stuff like that in my home. My kids drink nothing but water and milk. And I just make sure they eat right. Now, they have to cheat because they're kids. They have to enjoy life because they're still kids. But, you know, as parents, we got to monitor what they eat. Because when your family members are affected by it, you know, you have to be very careful what you do with your kids.
So, Greg, if you don't get obese, if you avoid that, are you likely, is a person who would be likely to get diabetes if they were more obese, less likely to if they remain thin?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you have a genetic predisposition towards type 2 diabetes, by keeping your weight down, you're going to reduce your risk. And that study has been done. And it showed that with lifestyle change alone in a high-risk individual, you may reduce your risk by close to 60%.
Wow. Hey, Joe, hey, Victor, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Let's go to Joe in South Hadley. Okay, Joe, you're on.
Oh, hello.
Hey, Joe, you're on.
Hey, great. I wanted to ask about, I'm a type 1 diabetic, have been for about 25 years now, and throughout that time, the sticking point has always been the cost of the test strips for the blood sugar machine. And I wanted to ask, is there any reason that those companies would ever produce a machine that didn't require $50 a pop strips there, or the expensive strips? Because that's always been sort of the thing that has kept me from testing more often, is that it's just too expensive to keep testing your blood sugar 6 and 8 times a day.
Well, it is. I think you've got to get, if you have insurance, this helps, and you have to get your doctor to advocate for you and document that you have such a need. Without insurance, it becomes very expensive. In terms of looking to pharma to make a cheaper strip, I think that's happening. It's just hard to find. So How do you come up with that? I think you go over to places where they do high volume, and the strips are less expensive. So you go to your Walmart areas and look for their meters and strips, and you're likely to find them to be much less expensive than the typical branded meters and strips.
Okay, I have an Alan question for you. How come when I use the strips and I do them, sometimes I can do three in a row just in the morning, and they're all different? Get a new machine.
No.
Right.
Do not get a new machine. Look, the precision rate of these meters is good, but it's not 100%. So you should expect at least a 10% error. So even doing the same drop of blood twice, you're likely to find a variation, but within 10%. The further off the mark you are, so instead of being close to 100 or 120, you're up around 300, 400, you'll find even more variation.
Yeah, well, Dominique.
Yeah, you know, I agree with the doc 100%. You know, it's not 100% accurate. I mean, my sugar levels had off a little bit, you know, testing, you know, right behind one another, you know, without me eating anything at all. And so you got to get the best meter that you can buy for yourself that have some reliability, and, you know, you can get a long term.
Are they getting better? Do you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're getting better. Mm-hmm. No question.
Okay. Well, Joe, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Henry in Cooperstown. Henry.
Yes.
You're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was diagnosed with diabetes type 2 on November 6th of this year, and came quite suddenly. I had no expectation that anything was going wrong and so on, and all of a sudden here I am, a diabetic, and I do have some family history. It took me a while to persuade myself that I did, but I do. And my mom and my couple of my uncles were diabetic and had really quite a hard time with it. But my question is this: I have the doctor that originally diagnosed my diabetes says I have to take three blood tests a day, and I find that a little bit overimposing. I don't know whether that's necessary to do that. My blood sugars are running in the 120s, 130s, 90s, 60s. I've only had one reading of 202, and that was one time. And I don't think I need to test three times a day, because it does become time-consuming and it does become sloppy after a while.
Who comes
Is
first?
There any way I can circumnavigate that three-a-day
well,
test?
You never should shortcut your health. I know this is this is very new for you. It's like it was for me when I found out that I was diabetic. But
I think more surprised than I was.
Yeah, trust me. I had gotten mine at age 40, so believe me, I was shocked. But again, you know, you gotta test aggressively in the beginning just to get an average of what your sugar levels are doing, and then, you know, you continue to build that relationship with your physician where, you know, you gotta go by your physician's recommendations on what you should be doing as far as testing. And I know a lot of times, even when I first started testing, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. I mean, why am I testing so much? But as time went on, I realized how important it was that I did test, so I could get a better average of where my sugar levels were going. And so I knew I needed to make some changes. If it would fluctuate a little higher, I needed to make some changes in my diet or my exercises so I can get those levels down in a manageable level.
Greg Garrity?
Diabetes is a serious disease. I think you may be able to cut back a little bit on your testing, but not do away with it altogether, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Henry, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay, so we're out of time, and we've left Dan from Clifton Park on the phone and Carrie from Albany on the phone, but that's the way it goes, and I'm so sorry about that. Dr. Greg Garrity, keep doing what you're doing. You're terrific. And Dominique Wilkins, thank you so much for being here with us and, you know, laying it all out for us. I know that when role models do this kind of thing, it's immensely helpful to to the society and to everybody. And once again, I want to recommend that everybody who wants to shows up at the Albany Marriott, 189 Wolf Road tonight between 6 and 7:30, free admission. And Dominique Wilkins is going to talk, give you a talk about what's going on. We thank you all for being with us today. And now, if you stay tuned for the news, we just want to do one thing and thank our wonderful Zach for doing what he does every day. And thanks to the Anderson Center for Autism, Statsburg, New York, working to improve lives on the spectrum from 18 months to adulthood, diagnosis to graduation, AndersonCares.org, the Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, annual holiday marketplace featuring a gallery of wreaths, local vendors, crafts, and more, December 7th from 10 to 5, and December 8th from 10 to 4 p.m., BerkshireBotanical.org. Thanks to Zach Malloy, as I said, Tom Jobe for our social media, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, Ian Pickus. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop.